Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am one of your hosts for today, Ursula Rudenberg, together with my co-host, Pat Schlarbaum. Hello, Pat, and hello, listener.
Hello, Ursula, and hello to you, our valued listener. Hey, today's show will feature the work of some biologists near Decorah, Iowa. We will be discussing the highly regarded Decorah Eagles. Now, this has been a pair of eagles that have been attracted to the fish hatchery, Bob Anderson's Raptor Resource Project, for a number of years now, 4 or 5 years, and it's really highly acclaimed. We're going to be visiting with falconer and cinematographer Neil Redig. Neil will share some of his projects for National Geographic. Then later in the show, we will discuss wildlife rehabilitation with Kay Newman, and she is the director of Saving Our Avian Resources, SOAR, in Dedham, Iowa, just south of Carroll, which is west of Ames. So that's our show. But first, it's membership time at KHOI.
Yep, we're fundraising to sustain our mission of building community through communication. Please be included in our expanding community of supporters and volunteers. It is work, but it is also so much more. We really have a community of volunteers and supporters, and it's really something positive to be included in that can benefit all Iowans, and from a wide expanse of topics, from local foods to local music to local political issues. We also invite you to be part of the work of the station if you're interested in doing radio. So please join us in volunteering at the station, but right now we're asking for you to support the station. Please consider this opportunity to financially support KHOI. Call 515-292-2878 or contribute online at khoifm.org. That's 515-292-2878 or to donate online at khoifm.org.
Ursula, we really want to encourage our listeners to please consider our basic membership of $55 per year or whatever value that works for your budget. Please realize becoming one of our sustaining members is the best investment money can buy to strengthen the Ames community through communication. It's our communication. It's your communication with facilities at 410 Douglas in downtown Ames. Stop in for a visit at the Ames Pantorium building. We will welcome you to our growing community of supporters.
So let's start our morning local talk show, Pat, with a phenology, which is the tracking of the natural calendar of events for plants and animals.
Yeah, we've got some new arrivals in Iowa. Today's focus on phenology are sandhill cranes. Yesterday at Otter Creek Marsh, there were 127 cranes, and this is 4 miles east of Tama on Highway 30 to E66, 1 mile to a viewing platform. You're right there among the cranes. Here's a little story. One time, a steady autumn rain was collecting strength as a birding friend was checking prairie potholes for migrating ducks. Serenely, he sighted a group of large birds flying in a rather tight formation, steel-gray birds against a gray western sky. He said it was a squadron of great blue herons, I think. But I've never seen 7 in a flock. So I asked, were their necks coiled or were they extended? And he replied, their necks were straight out and their legs were like the tail on a kite in the wind. And when they landed, they began leaping and bouncing along like they were on pogo sticks. So I said, it sure sounds like sandhill cranes, and what a great bird to see returning to Iowa's marshes. But the part about the pogo sticks, I'd never thought about cranes leaping like they were on pogo sticks. But in flight, great blue herons, which is another big gray bird, typically coil their S-curved necks against their breast. Conversely, sandhill cranes extend their necks straight out. Herons are generally solitary, while cranes often travel as groups. Reports of multiple herons are probably sandhill cranes. Cranes also provide an animated display of leaping and calling in their courtship antics, presenting and tossing cattails all the while flapping their 6-foot wingspan and creating a rousing ruckus throughout any marsh. It's really a fascinating show from these marsh dancers. Greater sandhill cranes are 4 to 5 feet in height and weigh from 10 to 14 pounds. Noticeable in their calls, sandhill cranes are prehistoric birds, and these calls are resonating through more and more of Iowa's wetlands. They are the oldest living bird species with a lineage in the fossil record dating back some 10 million years. The number of greater sandhill cranes reported in Iowa increased significantly in the 1980s, culminating in their return as a nesting species in 1992 at Otter Creek Marsh. These nesting birds migrated from wintering grounds in Florida and Georgia and are derived from the increasing Wisconsin flock, which is spilling into Iowa. The huge flocks that gather in central Nebraska near Kearney are the lesser sandhill cranes, and they nest in Canada, Alaska, and Siberia. True to the adage, build it and they will come, provide habitat and wildlife will respond by pioneering into rejuvenated habitat. Cranes have been included in bird counts in at least 54 counties in recent years. Nesting has been noted in 28 counties since that first successful nesting in 1992. So cranes were considered an extremely shy species that had little tolerance of humans, but according to bird biologist Dr. James Dinsmore, cranes now nest in closer contact with humans than was formerly thought possible. So if you get a chance to leap on down to your favorite marsh, and hopefully you will be serenaded to the primal calls of a species which was a long time gone from Iowa marshes, and they have returned. Enjoy your visit with friends, family, or particularly young ones. It'll be worth it. And that's our phonology for today.
Ursula, sandhill cranes last nested in Iowa in 1894 in Hancock County in north central Iowa. And the best times to hear and see cranes is around dawn, or about this time in the morning. And or by 11 a.m., they return from to the marsh from feeding to the north. So,
wow, 10 million years.
Yeah, I think.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and they were here, you know, a nesting species, and then kind of wiped out in 1894. So to have them back.
I was in Viroqua, Wisconsin. And speaking of the cranes moving in towards people, the cranes there go into the front yard of my friend's house. And I was woken up in the, at dawn by that sound, and I thought it was some sort of machine breaking down. But it's really, it's an amazing sound to hear firsthand, and you really are hearing one of the sounds that you could hear when the dinosaurs were walking on the
there
earth.
There it is.
It's,
you know, it's
amazing.
Primordial.
Mm-hmm.
So to have them back.
It's really wonderful.
The weather's going to be changing. They do have a very chiseled beak that can break through frost and, you know, utilize their corn. But I guess the point being that 127, those are probably Iowa birds. So mm-hmm. from the start in 1992, it's starting to trend upwards and pretty
it's
neat.
It's really amazing.
It's something that'll brighten your day. So maintaining our outdoor theme, let's focus upon our national symbol, bald eagles. And joining us today is Neil Redig. Welcome to Local Talk, Neil.
Hello, Pat.
Hi, Neil. This is Ursula.
Hi, Ursula. How are you?
Hi. So before we start, Pat, could you give us just a little bit of a background on the Decorah Eagles?
Well, I know some of the listeners have been following the Decorah Eagle cam story. They there was a nesting pair, and Neil Redig, cinematographer for National Geographic, and Bob Anderson were able to put together a wonderful production, I guess, five, six years ago. And those birds have been nesting at the fish hatchery there in Decorah. Bob kind of took the opportunity to get hooked up with Neil and provide a camera. And then all of a sudden, biologists were able to see things that were previously kind of unknown. Neil had some pretty good vantage points for filming nesting and hatching little eaglets and going through the process. But to share that with the world, it's Neil Redig's a pretty unique individual.
So we've gone through how many years now of cycles for the eagles?
Yeah, how many years, Neil?
We started the film American Eagle, and that's when we first put up the Decorah Nest Cam. I believe we started in 2006. It may have been 2007, actually. And that was the first, you know, prototype Nest Cams that Bob and Raptor Resource put up, and we did it in conjunction with the American Eagle film, which we did for PBS.
Yeah.
And that we really did a lot of the footage for the film at the Decorah Nest. And we used not only the Nest Cam, but a lot of other footage that we acquired with high-definition cameras from various vantage points, including a barn that was at about the same level that we use an upper window of a barn for a blind on some adjacent property. So that was really awesome.
So just to be clear, this is one pair of eagles that have been living there since the beginning.
2007.
Well, actually, it's not. The first female there had one eye. So she was incredibly easy to identify. And she disappeared that first year. And then a new female came along that was much younger. So, you know, the fact that bald eagles have white heads and white tails makes it a little bit difficult to tell them apart unless you're really intimate looking at those individual birds, you know, with the nest cam, for example. But eagles are, you know, if one dies, they mate for life, but if one dies, they'll take a replacement mate when they can, you know, find one. So it's an interesting story. That occupation, that nest site at the fish hatchery has been very consistent since, you know, 2006, 2007.
By consistent, you mean a consistent pair of eagles?
A pair of eagles using the nest.
And they've raised several generations of babies.
Normally bald eagles lay between 2 and 4. 3 is a very eggs. 3 is a very common number of eggs and young. All the eggs don't always hatch in a clutch. But with bald eagles, the hatchability is pretty high.
It sure has been with the Decorah eagles. Three eggs, three hatchlings, three fledglings. Hey, this is there's some exciting developments I'm going to share later on. But first, Neil, what makes Neil Redig tick up? How did you get involved with photography?
Well, it's kind of a long story, but I'll make it short. When I was a kid, I grew up in northern Illinois, and we were right on the edge of farm country, and basically I could walk for 2 miles without hitting a fence. And now that I think about it, that was actually Oak Grove Savannah, next to the house where I grew up. And my parents encouraged me to pick up a Super 8 camera we had laying around the house. We used to make monster movies and things like that. And I went on to art school, went to Chicago, Chicago Academy of Fine Arts. And I just became obsessed with, about the same time I became obsessed with raptors and picking up cameras and just going out and doing probably incredibly boring footage that I'd show at parties of red-tailed hawks nesting and things like that. But I just got the bug, both with the natural history interest and also with photography and cinematography, starting way back.
And falconry entered into the picture.
Yeah, my interest in birds of prey really started, falconry really fed it with a lot of enthusiasm. And I learned a lot through working with birds, through falconry, about just what makes a bird of prey tick. So that those combinations of photography, falconry, and just a general interest in nature just kind of fed this flame that continues to burn till today.
When did you start with National Geographic, Neil?
I actually went to South America on my own after saving money, painting houses, and collecting garbage in northern Illinois in 1973, looking for a harpy eagle nest with a couple of spring-wound cameras and two crazy high school friends that were looking for adventure. And we actually went down to South America and searched in Suriname in a wilderness area. We went up river with giant dugout canoes that we had to portage over rapids. Stayed 3 months in the jungle, didn't find a nest on that trip, went back the following year, found a harpy eagle nest, and stayed for 9 months in the rainforest, sleeping in a thatched roof hut with no electricity, just winding up our cameras and documenting the entire nesting cycle of the harpy. The harpy eagle is the largest eagle in the world, much more powerful than a bald eagle.
Yeah, how big are those harpies?
If you put it in comparison, a big female bald eagle may weigh 14 pounds, and a big female harpy can weigh 18 pounds.
Hmm.
So they're quite large, and they feed on monkeys and sloths and other mammals in the canopy of the rainforest. Very endangered bird.
Mm-hmm. And I understand you do have one for educational purposes?
Yeah, I've got a harpy that his name is Cal, and he was a captive bred bird that came from the Peregrine Fund in Boise, Idaho. And I helped the Peregrine Fund with harpy eagle research and shared my nest sites with them, with the Peregrine Fund. And they gave me Cal as an educational partner, and we've had him for 15 years now.
Yeah, and this provides incredible outdoor experiences for people to ever have an opportunity to see Neil Reddick with his harpy eagle. Well, let's kind of focus back with when did you meet Bob Anderson?
I met Bob in 1995 when we were doing a film for Discovery.
And Bob's the director
on Birds of Prey.
Yeah, Bob's the director of the Raptor Resource Project.
And at that time, Bob was living up in Hugo, Minnesota, and he was already legendary in the falconry and the conservation community for his dedication at that time breeding peregrine falcons. And it was just great. We hit it off when I met Bob. And actually, I asked Bob immediately if he could take care of a captive-bred red-tailed hawklet, young hawk that I had raised. And so Bob took care of that hawk, and we became good friends and actually worked for many years together. Bob was my assistant for a number of years, traveling all over the world, to Alaska and to South America. And I actually did some harpy eagle work with Bob down in Guyana. So,
any memorable stories on any of those
adventures? Oh, got a lot of memorable stories. Especially in Alaska, when Bob, I remember he was. We were camping in Katmai National Park, and it was late in the fall, and the bears were all getting ready to go into hibernation. And Bob, I don't think he slept for five nights because he was clutching pepper spray and laying in the center of his tent to stay away from the walls because all night long there were bears brushing, literally brushing against the walls of his tent.
Yeah.
And that was just one of the memorable experiences with Bob. Another one was in South America where he kind of fell in love with these beautiful Amerindian villages in Guyana. He used to call it Shangri-La, you know, just peaceful places where everything was in harmony. And Bob was great to have along on some of those projects.
So just to recap for those of you who have joined our conversation, this is Local Talk, and we're speaking with Mr. Neil Reddick, who is an acclaimed photographer and filmmaker. We are talking about his work with Bob Anderson, who recently passed away. Bob was the director of the organization in Decorah, Iowa, that was the Raptor Resource Project, which was involved with bringing peregrine falcons back to Iowa, but also is maybe the best known in the world for the eagle cam that they put on a nest of eagles that had nested conveniently in the backyard of a fish hatchery and really offered the world an opportunity to watch eagles close up on how they raise generation after generation of young. These are very successful eagles, the ones in this eagle cam.
This is Pledge Week. We'll get back with Neil here shortly, but this is Pledge Week at KHOI. So we're asking for your financial support. We're inviting you to become a sustaining member of this community radio station. I certainly enjoy bringing some of the outdoor stories to the station, but boy, there's just a wealth of knowledge to get shared here through these microphones from local foods, local music, local politics, just anything to do with strengthening the Ames community is involved right through this studio. And we depend on unpaid volunteers to produce the shows that you hear. But we also depend on you, the listener, to provide financial support needed to keep the transmitter humming and to pay other operating expenses. And I'm sure our station manager has a lot of thoughts on how we can spend this money frugally and yet get the most for every dollar.
Yeah, it costs about $7,500 a year right now for us to run the station, to operate it. And it is still a challenge for us to meet that, and we're looking for you to help answer that question of how do the bills get paid. Mm-hmm. It's an operation that costs about $7,500 a month. However, we do have a goal for the station to begin to have a paid manager, because it's hard for us around here without a full-time paid manager. And most everybody here is a volunteer. We do have a paid engineer, and we would like to have somebody paid to manage the station. So that will increase our bills a little bit. The operation will be a little more than $7,500 a year. That's what we're asking you to help us meet by calling 292-2878. And if you're outside of our listening area, listening to us online at khoifm.org, we ask you to call 515-292-2878, or you can just donate online at khoifm.org. There's a donate button there. Please join us.
Yeah, you can share in the ongoing operation of the station by becoming a member of KHOI. Our basic membership is just $55, about 15 cents a day. Or if you can donate up to $100 or whatever your budget can provide, it's a matter of connecting and having some ownership with something that we're a growing enterprise here at 410 Douglas.
And one of the things that's just so great about KHOI, I personally just feel, even though I'm the one often involved with the production of it, I'm also a listener. I listen very, very carefully to everybody that we interview. I'm really enjoying speaking with you, Neil, and thank you for your patience with us here as we pitch for KHOI. But every time we have a guest like you on, it's such a rich experience for me personally. And we want to share this with you as a listener, the just wealth of incredible information and talent and artistry, just fascinating activities that are constantly occurring in our community, and really bringing these to the air and just learning about them. I was aware of the Eagle Cam from the web, but having worked at KHOI now, I have this incredibly deepened understanding of what this project is. And I've actually now been able to speak with the people who have made this project possible. So as you listen to us, as we continue speaking with Mr. Redding, please keep in mind our phone number is 515-292-2878, 515-292-2878. And our website is khoifm.org, where we ask you to go and donate.
Yes, please join us financially.
Now, Pat, you yourself have been involved with these projects. You're not an innocent bystander. You are one of the people that helped make Bob Anderson's journey into Iowa possible. As I understand, there was kind of a weird synchronicity between Mr. Anderson's passing and the actual nest of the Eagles falling out of the tree.
Yeah, we're talking with Neil Redding about his work around the world. That includes Bob Anderson's Raptor Resource Project. But, yeah, there was a development. Can you take us back to July, that Sunday evening, Neil?
Yeah. Bob had some health issues that were quite worrisome for everybody involved in Raptor Resource and all of his friends and family, of course.
And the tree came down.
About a week before Bob passed away or so, I was laying in bed trying to sleep and tossing and turning, and I thought, well, actually, I'm getting a little ahead of myself. I've got to say, I don't remember the exact date when the nest tree snapped and the nest fell down. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I think it was that Sunday evening, just about a week before his passing.
And why did the nest come down?
A violent wind came through and knocked down a number of trees, including the nest tree. And I wasn't clear exactly what happened. We were at a what's called After the Fledge. It was a kind of a get-together where people give presentations.
The Young of the Year fledged, you had a gathering?
Yeah, it was after the Young Eagles fledged. And, that morning, the winds came through, and they literally snapped this huge cottonwood tree basically in half, so that the main trunk of the tree was just severed, and the whole canopy of the tree spilled down onto the ground. the nest fell apart.
That contained the camera.
Yeah, and you know the whole thing went down. Bob was incredibly stressed, and that was making everything even more difficult for him because of his health problem at the time. And I called him several days after this night when I was tossing and turning because I came up with an idea, thinking, why don't we just rebuild the nest? And at that time, I didn't know that the whole tree went down. And it was several days went by, and I didn't hear anything from Bob. And then he called with John Howe, who's now the new director of Raptor Resource. He called me, Bob and John, and Bob was incredibly excited. He said, brilliant idea, you know, we got to go for it and rebuild a nest. And so we put the wheels in motion, and several weeks later, Bob actually passed away, and then we were all really motivated to carry on his legacy, and that was one of his wishes was to try to get this nest rebuilt and keep the Decorah Eagle Cam going. And so we planned out a schedule, got a lot of people volunteering, including Pat. And Pat was instrumental in helping get the permits to do this through the DNR. And the DNR has been very, very supportive of the Eagle work and the Decorah Nest Cam and Bob's work and Bob's ambitions. So anyway, we went up and scouted the tree and another tree 20 yards away and found a good spot that we thought would work. You know, we climbed up, looked at it.
What makes a good spot for an eagle?
The eagles like nice, stout, large trees in Iowa and Wisconsin. They love cottonwood trees. Mm-hmm. The majority of the eagle nests are in cottonwood trees.
So basically in a fork or a crotch?
In a great big fork, very,
substantial,
strong, sturdy fork. Normally the nests are 60 to 80 feet off the ground, so they're way up. And so we found a tree that we thought would work, and we started planning a schedule of events to rebuild the nest. Mm-hmm. And with a lot of people volunteering and the staff from Raptor Resource, we did it. And weeks went by, and then in early October, we had already installed the nest cameras up again. Early in October, eagles started visiting the nest and collecting sticks, and we were just doing the high five, sticking well.
Yeah, so you didn't really complete a nest for them. You kind of gave them a good foundation, a good platform, if you will, big flat area. And
they came back to build the rest of it?
Exactly. We made the nest, you know, sizable, because bald eagle nests can get quite large. In fact, they can get so large that they'll eventually
bring the tree down.
Bring the tree down.
Yeah.
We made it about 5 feet in diameter, and it was about 3 feet deep.
During the time that you were building the nest, were the eagles around at all? Did they observe your activity?
We actually saw the parents flying overhead a couple times, which was...
I got pictures.
Doing flybys?
Yeah,
doing flybys.
Oh, it's their territory. They know everything in their territory.
I'm sorry?
They know everything in their territory.
Oh, they don't miss it. Yeah.
So they were presumably observing what you were doing.
Hmm? Yeah, and you know, because we built the nest within 20 yards of the old nest, it was just, you know, basically presented to them as an opportunity, and they took it.
It's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. So how weave in a story about Kike, one of your chief assistants there, could you please?
Oh, yeah, Kike. His name is actually Henrique Arenal. He worked for the Peregrine Fund. He's Venezuelan. I met him in 1995. We were climbing these massive trees down in South America when we were doing work with harpy eagles. And he was a first-class climber. Rock climber, tree climber. He had a lot of experience helping biologists with the Peregrine Fund reaching these harpy eagle nests and you know, putting transmitters on or banding harpy chicks. So I met him on a harpy project. He helped me in Venezuela. And ever since that, we've been traveling together, periodically working on usually really hard and dangerous projects that require a lot of technical climbing skills up in trees and building platforms and blinds. Kike worked with me in the Philippines on a six-month project that we still have actively going, a conservation and film project for the Philippine eagle, which is the rarest eagle in the world. There's only about 300 left. So Kike was a great asset to have helping with the rebuild and the installation of the Decora bald eagle nest cameras. And so he spent a period of time just this fall helping us, helping Raptor Resource.
He seemed to fit right into Northeast Iowa, folks.
Can I ask you two guys about this eagle nest? You rebuilt the nest in fall?
In July.
In July.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the eagles came back to add sticks to the nest, mm-hmm. were they anticipating next year's family?
Yeah, what happens is, and Pat knows about this as well, mm-hmm. there's a photo period. Biologically, all these raptors and different wildlife are stimulated hormonally by photo period.
That's the sunlight.
Daylight.
Length of daylight.
Length of daylight. And in the fall, in October, early November, you've got similar length of daylight that you would in the springtime. So it kicks off this interest in nest building. And the bald eagles will come in for a period of about, 3-4 weeks and start refurbishing the nest, adding sticks and lining of grass for the nest bowl. And then when it starts getting really cold, like it's going to become in the next few days, that behavior wanes, and then they pick up again on it in late January to do the real thing in preparation for
in the spring. It just ramps up, whereas in autumn it kind of wanes.
That's
or
right.
dwindles.
That's right.
And during the winter they don't live in the nest?
They only occupy the nest when they're raising young, but the nest is sort of the nucleus of their, activity.
Mm-hmm. So where are they during the winter?
In the winter, they're just trying to find food. Some of the eagles migrate further south to get away from the nasty cold weather, but in Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota, often you'll find, bald eagles hanging around open water where they can still fish. They can catch fish and some waterfowl. But they don't use the nest at all except for breeding purposes.
So they just kind of sleep on a tree.
They sleep in a tree, standing up.
Yeah. And they
like all birds.
And for a social social bird, you'll see them this time of year side by side, one of the few times.
Mm-hmm.
But they do kind of collect during the winter season. By collecting, I mean where there's open water, and they're going to be right there fishing, and that's their sustenance. So, so we have a situation now with the glass is half full. There's hope and optimism that the Decora Eagle Cam can quite likely, nothing guaranteed in nature, but quite likely there will be a Decora Eagle Cam. Now that Bob has passed, he'd want us to do this. So this is a big deal, Neil.
So
yeah,
this...
and when we first came up with the idea to build a new nest, I thought, well, it's 50-50 if they'll use it. And now I've got to say I'm confident enough to say it's 90%. There's a 90% chance that they're going to use that nest to lay eggs.
Wow, thank you.
And the project will continue. It's wonderful. So we're speaking with Neil Redding. And Neil is a national photographer, National Geographic photographer, and kind of a treasure of Iowa in his work in photographing nature. And really, it sounds like you really specialize in raptors and eagles. Is that correct, Neil?
I've done a lot of work with raptors. I've actually studied harpy eagles and published papers and popular articles about them in various magazines, including National Geographic.
Mm-hmm.
But lately my big focus has been on Philippine eagles, as I mentioned. And actually Bob Anderson, one of his ambitions was to start a Philippine eagle nest cam. And that is actually in the works right now. Bob was passionate about that. Bob knew that the bald eagle was actually in pretty good shape in this part of the country especially. Mm-hmm. And there are other species that are incredibly endangered and need all the help they can get. So Bob wanted to turn his attention to the Philippine eagle. And we actually have a expedition planned for February. And we're, RRP, Raptor Resource, Bob's organization, is partnering with Cornell Laboratory of Ornithology. And we're traveling to the Philippines to check out the logistics of the installation, you know, of the nest cams at some Philippine eagle nests. So that's exciting.
Probably one of the more endangered eagles on the planet. And Bob's mission was if we can share the interest from the Decorah Eagle Cam, it might reflect positively and essentially save the Philippine eagles.
Exactly. Philippine eagles, and they need all the help they can get. And what's happened in the Philippines is a tragic loss of 95% of their rainforest.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And a lot of that occurred during the big commercial logging days in the 70s and 80s.
So loss of habitat, once again.
Loss of habitat.
Kind of rears its... Well, I do encourage our listeners to Google Neil Rettig, R-E-T-T-I-G. You're going to see a wealth of information and knowledge, and a particular honor, and I respect your work so much, Neil.
Thank you.
Let's see what Bob Anderson would want us to see what we could do for Philippine eagles. We've got the Decorah eagles with a 90% projection of ongoing this year, and can't thank you enough.
So thank you, and thank you, Pat, for all of your help in making this happen and making it possible, and we appreciate the Iowa DNR and their involvement in Bob's work with peregrines and the bald eagle nest cams.
Let's do this again and include your wife, Lori.
That would be great.
Okay. You know, I know you're a great team, especially there's Philippine stories. And
we've got a ton of Philippine stories.
But for today, we've been listening with Neil Rettig. Thank you, Neil.
Okay, thanks.
About his work with National Geographic and the Decorah Eagle Cam. And I think it's...
Thank you for joining us, Neil. Really appreciate you being with us this morning. And speaking of survival...
Here we go. Yeah, you're listening to Local Talk 89.1 FM, and this is our membership pledge drive week. And we're here to explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. And we're currently fundraising to sustain our mission of building community through communication. Please be included in our expanding community of supporters and volunteers to do this work. KHOY is a renewable resource. And that can mean a couple things. KHOY is a resource that keeps coming back to you each and every day. KHOY relies on your renewed support to continue to provide the service you've come to trust and love. And like all renewable resources, KHOY is there for you every day, 365 days a year, powering you through your day with great music and great international and local news. But like all renewable resources, it takes careful stewardship of those resources to keep it flowing. And like all resources, community radio is part of our shared heritage. Community radio belongs to all of us, to the people. It's our right, our inalienable right, created by Congress to have a public radio system. And like all rights, it comes with responsibilities. So please pick up your phone right now and call us at 515-292-2878 and tell the volunteer who answers the phone that I want to protect my natural resources. I want to become a member of KHOI. I've been thinking about this for days, and the time has come. Yes, it is. Today's the day for you to do your part. So call now at 515-292-2878 or pledge securely online at our website, khoifm.org. Help renew this renewable resource by calling 515 292-2878 or khoifm.org.
515-292-2878 or khoifm.org.
Please consider our basic membership of $55 per year or whatever value that works for your budget. Please realize becoming one of our sustaining members is the best investment money can buy to strengthen the Ames community through communication. It's our communication, it's your communication with facilities here at 410 Douglas in downtown Ames.
And for those of you outside of Ames, we also are here for you. In fact, KHOI reaches a large area in central Iowa, and we really seek to reach out to the surrounding area. We're located in Ames. We're actually technically belongs to Story City. And there's also Jefferson, Iowa. There's Boone. There's Nevada. There's Webster City. There's Huxley, Slater,
Cambridge.
Yeah, State Center. State Center. Can't forget State Center. We're going to go out there soon. And there's just a whole wealth of just activity happening all over central Iowa and even beyond, as we were just witnessing with Mr. Neil Redding, and the connection that Iowa has to the Philippines, of all places,
well,
in terms of saving eagles, both in Iowa and in the Philippines.
Yeah.
So it's really quite a world. I really wouldn't have known about any of this if I hadn't been working here at KHOI. It's always, always an honor to share this information with you and to share the experience of discovering these people and discovering the events and stories that really make up our life in Iowa. So please join us. It's just a great, great opportunity for us to know each other, to that expresses all that we are. And again, the number is 515-292-2878, and the website is khoifm.org. Please join us.
Yeah, this is a great opportunity now to maybe shift some of our focus a little more locally to Kay Newman. Kay is the director of a nonprofit that is a wildlife rehabilitation center referred to as Saving Our Avian Resources. SOAR does not need the notoriety to bring in more wildlife species. On the line, we've got Kay Newman. Good morning, Kay.
Good morning.
And recently I read where your project assisted 120 more injured birds this season.
Than last year. So we're up over 100 admits this year.
What?
Up over 300. We've got about 350 patients this year. So, yeah, it's been a real unusual year.
And you're into growth and development, but how is your supporters stepping up for this work?
Well, and as you said, Pat, we are a nonprofit, and so all of the rehabilitation, the education, the research that we do is funded by donations. So just like you guys.
Kay, can you just give a brief description of exactly what SOAR does?
So SOAR does our we kind of have three main goals. Wildlife rehabilitation is our first goal. So taking an injured wild bird, trying to fix whatever's wrong with them and releasing them back out into the wild. And so as Pat was mentioning, we're well over 300 wild bird patients this year. And so many more than last year. I think we've been averaging, close to 200 a year. And so we are not sure why we have so many more birds coming in, but we're trying to take care of every one of them. We do a lot of educational programming. There are birds that we cannot repair well enough that we can release them back out into the wild. And some of those non-releasable birds were allowed to keep and use for programming. So we have hawks, owls, eagles, and falcons that we can take to events and to schools and do some environmental education programming with. And that's always a treat for students, and people could see a bald eagle up close or a peregrine falcon up close and be able to talk about some of our habitat concerns, some of our lead poisoning concerns with bald eagles, and that leads into the research that we've been working on. And so we've been collaborating with the other wildlife rehabilitators in the state, the Iowa State University Wildlife Care Clinic, and the Blackhawk County Wildlife Rehabilitators over near Waterloo, and gathering data on our Iowa bald eagles. And it's time for them to start showing up. Iowa's a major wintering area for bald eagles, and it's right during all of our hunting seasons. And so we're expecting, we expect an annual influx in the fall and winter of bald eagles with lead poisoning. They scavenge on an animal that has been shot, or a gut pile from an animal that's been shot with any kind of lead ammunition. Yeah. There are lead fragments and pieces of the ammunition left in the carcass or the gut pile, and that causes real problems for bald eagles.
Yeah, in conjunction with
is what we're looking at for the next season, I'm afraid.
Yeah, in conjunction with the fish that sustain a lot of bald eagles, they do scavenge. They have a very varied diet, and it does include, unfortunately, in the offal pile, the leaving. People are beginning to notice that when you're out deer hunting, that the eagles are hovering. They've kind of, it's almost like they're acclimating to the fact that there's going to be a meal right down there after the deer goes down and the deer gets taken home, but everything else gets left behind, the intestines and all that. And if you've been shooting lead, what happens then?
We've been working on, so just was actually working on our data set for publication with a postdoc veterinarian that was at Iowa State, and we're wrapping that up and being submitted. So out of the 322 eagles that came into us over the last 11 years, half of those came to us because they had ingested lead. And so that's kind of the major concern. The data that we gather is like emergency room data for humans. And so if half of the people going to an emergency room had some sort of a toxin in their system, the doctors would be saying, oh, this is not a big deal. We're not worried. There's lots of people. No, that's probably not what they'd be thinking. They would be alarmed. There would be concern. They'd be looking for the source of the toxin and trying to prevent that from happening. And that's what we've been doing. And so our veterinarians that we work with, Dr. Struve over in Manning and Dr. Dirks up in Spirit Lake, have been absolutely wonderful resources. We've x-rayed eagles so we could see what was in their digestive tract. Lead is radio opaque and actually glows on an x-ray, so you can immediately tell what you've got when you run it through an x-ray. You can at least tell you have a metal.
Interesting.
And then we've done necropsies from there to confirm what has been in their digestive tract. We actually found a .22 bullet in an eagle's digestive tract. So he must have eaten Gavin's rabbit or something like that.
And they don't normally need to take the whole bullet. It can be just a fragment of the slug, as small as a pencil lead.
Yeah, trying head. To eat they're so eagles so, are so efficient at digestion. That a tiny little fragment, I think it's like 80 milligrams, would be enough to be lethal for a bald eagle. So, yeah, like that. But
and these,
aspirin or a grain of rice, something like that.
This exposure is preventable. I know Bob Anderson and I talked, and we had programs concerning this preventable activity by encouraging your deer hunter friends to take non-lead. There are other types of projectiles for that hunting experience. We're not trying to stop hunting. We're just trying to encourage people to use something that's not toxic to the planet.
And the ammunition companies have really stepped up here. I never thought that every time we go to a sporting goods store, that I go bullet shopping to see what the selection is for non-lead slugs, non-toxic shot, copper bullets, that sort of thing.
Yep.
And all the major manufacturers now, so Winchester, Federal, and Remington, all make a copper or a non-lead version of the shotgun slug. And everyone that we have talked with that has switched over to this copper slug, they've been absolutely pleased with it. And they wouldn't they would not go back to their old lead slugs at this point in time. They're real pleased with the accuracy and the efficiency of the copper slug. And so, yeah, we're really just doing some bullet advertising, Pat. Never thought we'd be doing that being a wildlife rehabilitator, but
we're speaking with
a non-lead variety of any kind of ammunition anyone would want to use. You have to be aware and ask for it and choose that.
Yeah.
So it's a kind of a, you know, if the consumers want it, then the manufacturers will make it for them.
Just ask, according to Kay Newman, just ask for it.
We're speaking with Kay Newman, who is with the Save Our Avian Resources, which is an organization that to some degree is spends a lot of time dealing with injured birds and rehabilitating them. And, Kay, where are you located?
We are in Carroll County. So we're in west central Iowa and pretty much take in birds from the western half of the state and have volunteers in Des Moines that we have admits coming from a little bit further east. We have volunteers in Sioux City. And so a lot of people help us out with this as far as transport and just the general public. I mean, that's always just a neat thing to be able to talk to people that have found a bird. They make a very close connection with this individual animal. And that is helps us to lead them into all sorts of other things that they might do for wildlife. So you found a screech owl. If we can make it better, we have to have a good habitat to release it in. It needs hollow trees. It needs little grassy areas to hunt for mice. And so really makes people aware of wildlife and what they need to have on the ground as far as to live. And so it really helps people that might not ever think about conservation and natural resources get involved with things.
Yeah.
And so we've seen lots of progression from finding an injured eagle to actually one guy quit his job, went back to school, and is now working for a county conservation board.
Yeah.
He credits, being able to
your network,
help this eagle out.
Your network of supporters is fantastic. Kay Newman, director of the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center, Saving Our Avian Resources. We'll have to bring you back. And so this is our pledge week. Let's have all the listeners that have appreciated this program give us a call here at the station, 515-292-2878, or go online at khoifm.org.
That's 212. No, it's 515-292-2878. khoifm.org. And Kay, thank you so much for joining us, and please come back and share more with us about Save Our Avian Resources. And would you give your website?
It's soarraptors.org. So even if you just type Google Soar in Iowa, and we will come up.
S-O-A-R in Iowa.
R-A-P-T-O-R-S. I will.
Okay, you're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa, and also animals and plants.
If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends and consider becoming one of our 500 families donating $21 per month to help us meet our operating expenses, though we'd appreciate whatever fits your budget. Yeah, we'd also like to hear feedback either by phone at 515-292-2878 or by email at khoiradio@gmail.com.
Your participation as our audience is what makes KHOI possible. The most important thing you can do is listen. Thank you for listening.
And see you again on the radio.